Again, my name is Amelia Cobb. I'm president of the Right Group. We are a socially responsible health and human services consulting agency. We actually focus on working with government agencies and nonprofit organizations to impact change in the communities that they actually serve. We were started in 2004. Since then, we've worked with HHS, CDC, Robert Wood Johnson, American Legacy Foundation, Alliance for Community Health Plans, and Merck Pharmaceuticals on business cases for culturally linguistically appropriate services. So basically, our organization focuses on the underserved specifically. We don't take projects that don't focus in those areas. Thank you very much, Daryl. So today I'm going to briefly talk with you about examples of HIV/AIDS awareness and services in domestic violence centers and non-residential programs, in addition to specifically recognizing how intimate partner violence staff can actually be a conduit for HIV prevention and intervention services. This initiative, the Partnership to Reduce Intimate Partner Violence and HIV, was funded through HHS, the Office of Women's Health, specifically through the Prevention and Intervention AIDS-Related Services for Survivors of Domestic Violence. This specifically focuses on women exclusively and only. I just want to put that out there because even though it's the Office of Women's Health, a lot of times there are different initiatives where women, since they are the bearer of children, our children are also included in those initiatives. However, this initiative does not include children and specifically is not a grant but a small business contract. We all are familiar with intimate partner violence, but oftentimes people are not familiar with the intersection of IPV and HIV. There's been a lot of research that has been documented from an international perspective, but very little research has actually been documented in the public domain around domestic research in relationship to IPV and HIV in the U.S. A few researchers, Cohen, Jay Campbell, and M. Sweat, have actually documented that according to research, female survivors of intimate partner violence can be have the risk of HIV as high as 67%. In addition to that, the association between IPV and HIV can be explained in part because of the fact that abused women face difficulty in negotiating sexual matters or actually having protected sex with their partners. So what is the partnership? The partnership was a pilot program. The partnership was developed by the Right Group, and we had the what I call the luxury of actually participating in the pilot. HHS had not funded anything of this nature previously before, so we were basically the guinea pigs. And I say guinea pigs in a good way. It was formed in 2006 in October, and it was an initiative that brought together grassroots intimate partner violence organizations in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. We focus on training counselors and shelter workers of the intersection of HIV and IPV, and also HIV one-on-one is key. I don't know how many people in here we have that are HIV advocates. I've been in the HIV world for about 10 years, but unfortunately, we are still at the place where in some service agencies, we still have to do HIV one-on-one because there are a lot of providers and social services that have never received any type of HIV training. In addition to that, we increase the access, awareness, and testing, specifically the utilization of state and local services, referrals, and partnerships. And we build HIV/AIDS capacity in the intimate partner violence agencies. This was not a part of our original plan. Once we actually partnered with four local agencies and George Washington University Medical Center, we realized that organizational capacity for HIV prevention just was not there. We could not ask organizations to start talking with their clients about HIV prevention or intervention services if they didn't have any confidentiality policies in place to actually discuss that. In addition, we're not aware of what those were, not aware of where the local testing site was. So in that, we build the infrastructure for these agencies and their programming to their female survivors. In addition, organizational leadership, the executive directors for this had to be on board. If they were not on board and this training was not a mandatory activity for 50% of the shelter staff, they could not be a partner with us. So again, the goal was to provide a three-day training that consists of 8 hours for 20 IPV providers, again, enrolling 50% of the staff. Most HIV voluntary counseling and testing training series, activities, or modules are 80 hours. However, in a domestic violence shelter, there is no staff capacity for that. Our partners were as many as an organization with two people to an organization with as many as 35 people that work with the women. So that was just very unrealistic because, again, this is a grassroots effort. Two, our goal was to increase networking between both the HIV and IPV community. Unfortunately, we are public health professionals in this room, but oftentimes we know that we work in different fields and we don't talk to each other, or we actually feel like it's not an issue. You do have people that feel like intimate partner violence is not a public health issue. So what we did was we actually established the DC Partnership Working Group, and I'll get to that in a second. Some of the components of the partnership, again, are organizational HIV systems change. We go in an organization, we actually change the way their organization works from a systems perspective. We developed a gender-specific training curriculum. We conducted pre- and post-assessments, pre-assessments for the individuals who participated before they even participated in our module. We had three modules. Module 1 focused on HIV 101, that was gender-specific for women. Module 2, social norms in a relationship of IPV and HIV. Module 3 was client-centered counseling skills. Module 1 and 2 were very intense. Module 3 was more or less a case study. So we actually presented our training in a different series so that it just wasn't didactic. It really was an actual workshop day where all the providers actually worked with each other in role plays, case studies, focus groups, and actually talking about what some of their fears were. We did a 3-month follow-up, and in addition to that, we did boosters throughout the entire project period to actually encourage the staff members to stay up on their reading in relation to HIV prevention. And we also utilized our website to send out notices about upcoming trainings. To talk about the working group, we worked with 9 community-based organizations and actually a DC coalition as well to develop local recommendations for policy for the mayor of the District of Columbia's office, the DC HIV Prevention Planning Group, and the newly established Office on Women's Policy. And these recommendations will be released to these three offices on November 25th and on December 1st. Over 40 nonprofit organizations in DC, specifically to highlight the 16 days against violence for women. To end violence against women, excuse me. Again, this is just a few slides of who was trained. We have some mental health professionals, social workers, outreach workers, and other professionals as well. We actually reached our mark, beyond our mark, 60% of our mark. We were to train 20 providers. We ended up training 31 over the course of 9 months. Again, for module 1 and 2, we did pre- and post-test. We saw an increase of the post-test of 5 points. So there definitely was knowledge gained at the post-test and 3-month follow-up. These are the preliminary evaluation results. We actually just finished our 6-month follow-up evaluation, so we're doing a full rollout of interpreting all the data for the past 9 months. And again, social norms, we actually saw an increase of only 2 points. The good news is that by the time we got to the second module, majority of the staff members were very clear why they were there. So we feel like that definitely has some impact on their pre- and post-test. Again, project achievements, we were able to train over 66%. We established HIV prevention and testing referral recommendations for all of our agencies that participated, established HIV confidentiality policies for all the nonprofit organizations serving the women, and our dissemination outcomes. We actually developed a website, reduceipvandhiv.org, which to date we've got 229 hits thus far, which is good because it's a local regional initiative. In addition to that, we've actually provided HIV prevention materials, and the counselors have actually discussed with 727 women over the course of this past year, implementing HIV prevention and risk reduction negotiation skills that previously were not taking place. So now all of this information is actually in their impact, in their intake packets for every single organization that we work with. Briefly, challenges, and I know I probably have 2 minutes. Again, IPV and DV is not seen as a public health with community-based organizations. It just is not, especially because most of these IPV centers and shelters do not have health professionals on staff. They have health professionals that either volunteer or actually work with them because of a little grant, and they only work there 2 or 3 hours a week. Therefore, that is a big issue that we are constantly working with. Secondly, we have major staff turnover in community-based organizations, which we have definitely seen in our 3 and 6 month follow-up. We've actually seen a drop-off of half in the past year because of people who've gone on to different jobs, so we're unable to do a 6 month follow-up with them. The impact of local government in relationship to the community-based organizations. In our working group, there are more members than just 9. Unfortunately, we're unable to identify them because of the way they are funded. So they are scared that because we are providing these policy recommendations that are only recommendations, that they do not want to be documented as being participants for fear that they wouldn't get refunding, which became an issue. Documenting clients' HIV testing follow-up. Originally, we were trying to find a way to document our clients, the female survivor clients, being tested. However, you have some liability issues with the agencies who do not want to deal with that. Secondly, it's finding a partner that feels comfortable and that is specifically gender-specific. Our project is gender-specific, and that is very key in urban settings because you don't often get a place that is gender-specific where the women can go get tested, not feel threatened, and also not have stigma associated with them in their communities. And lastly, IPV partners are not allowing direct access to clients. The agencies are concerned of doing focus groups with the clients, which is totally understandable. The emotional and social challenges that these clients face to add another layer of rules that they have in relationship to this project could be a potential threat to that. So we are aware that those are the challenges. And lastly, next steps for 2007-2008, I'm very happy to say that OWH actually has funded us for a second year. They were very happy with our project. We actually are expanding our project to focus on Baltimore, specifically Northern Virginia and Atlanta, Georgia. So we would be developing working groups in those areas for replication. In addition to that, we will be documenting our partnerships and getting the women tested. And we actually are expanding and developing in conjunction with George Washington University an online curriculum and training module for women with disabilities who serve intimate partner violence, women with disabilities. So basically that concludes my session. Questions? Hopefully I didn't talk too fast, but I was trying to leave like 5 minutes for questions. So.